It wasn't until about 6 years ago that everything turned around for me. I'd learned about business and I learned about, you know, I started working with a consultant and from a practice that was producing $235,000 a year, we're edging towards 2.8, 2.9 million now.
Welcome to The Dental Marketer. This is your go-to podcast for diving deep into the world of business, marketing, self-development, and dentistry. From startup secrets to real talk with the pros, we've got it all. So whether you're just starting out or you're deep in years in running your own practice, join us for a mix of success stories, a few learning curves, and loads of insights from the brightest in the industry. We'll chat, learn, and grow together, one episode at a time. So a little insight on how we run some of these interviews. Beforehand, I'll sometimes send the person I'm interviewing a little outline, right? Some questions I may ask. I mainly typically ask some of the same questions on some interviews. For example, like, tell us a little bit about your past, your present, how'd you get to where you are today, things like that. And we send an outline. But ever so often, there comes across a conversation where we just completely forget about the questions or the dedicated questions or assigned questions because the conversation is just so good. And that's what this episode is here. I have the wonderful privilege of speaking with Dr. Maggie Augustin, and she walks us through her journey from being a dental school grad to becoming a caring and accomplished dentist. She's faced some tough challenges early on that almost threw her off course, but she's here to share how she got through it. And Maggie gives us a personal look at how she evolved, learning to be true to herself with the help of mentors and a lot of self-reflection. And she shares all of that. Now, Maggie opens up about her career path from dealing with less than ideal work situations to the bold move of owning her own practice. But despite the financial worries and the challenges of managing a business, she keeps it real with us about her growth, her constant effort to improve both as a dentist and a person. And we discuss the delicate balance between wanting to be liked and the necessity to provide honest, sometimes tough treatment plans, emphasizing the importance of empathy and building genuine connections with patients. What you'll learn in this episode is many things, but a couple things is the early challenges and misunderstandings that young practitioners, young dentists face in their medical journey, the importance of shedding false identities and embracing authenticity in the field of dentistry, how to navigate the financial and leadership aspects of launching and managing a private practice, the value of compassion, empathy, and honest communication in patient care. And this right here, that part right there, that's going to open up so many avenues, especially when you're treatment planning and you're presenting treatment to your patient. And then finally, how personal turmoil and struggles can impact and shape professional growth and perspective. Jam-packed episode. I'm excited for you to listen to this. So without further delay, here is Dr. Maggie Augustin. Maggie, how's it going?
I'm great. Thank you. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for asking. Maggie, if you can, tell us a little bit about your past, your present. How'd you get to where you are today?
I suppose it depends how much time you have. it's been a road that's been fraught with tremendous challenges. But having said that, I feel extremely lucky to have had to face those challenges because it's allowed me to become who I am, and it's allowed me to wake up every morning knowing why I am on this earth. But it took many years and many different false identities before I figured out who I was and what it is that I wanted to do. I ended up becoming a dentist, and I don't have a romantic story at all. I loved science. I liked working with my hands. I didn't think being a physician would be for me. And so my parents thought that going to dental school would be a good option for me, especially being a woman and possibly wanting to have a family down the road. And that's what I did. When I graduated dental school, I ended up getting a really great job in a fee-for-service office, and I was an arrogant jerk and ended up really soiling that opportunity. After that, I joined a DSO. Now, mind you, this is almost 20 years ago when DSOs weren't really around. And I remember coming to work and not having slow speed suctions or having the assistants restaple sterilization bags. And I decided that I was probably not fit to work for someone else. And I wanted to open my own office, but I was very, very scared of the financial burden that that would put on me. And I asked almost everybody that I knew that I'd graduated dental school with whether or not they'd want to go into business with me. This was about 18 months after graduation. And just about everybody said, no, we are enjoying earning this nice income and we're going to, you know, party and hang out a little bit more. We don't want these responsibilities just yet. And so the person that I was working with at the time had also been interested in starting a practice. And so the two of us started to look for a practice and ended up buying this practice that we've been at that yesterday we celebrated 18 years at. And so our beginnings were very, very rough. We had a practice that started with enough patients for one doctor 2 days a week, and we grew it into three doctors. My partner and I worked full-time for many years. I now only work 3 days a week and I have an associate 2 days a week. So we'd grown it into three doctors, 10 days a week, essentially. And this is where we're at. And we started as an HMO public aid office, and we are still insurance-driven. We are not a fee-for-service office, but I've had an opportunity to learn a tremendous amount about running a business and being a good doctor, being a good dentist, being a good leader, being a good example, along with creating a profit.
Right now, you're still currently in that practice.
Yes. I am chairside 3 days a week. I am chairside a total of 18 hours. And I'll tell you, it's a lot easier on my back and fewer body aches working so little. But I probably work on my practice more than I work in my practice. So even though I'm only 18 hours chairside, I probably spend at least an extra 20 to 30 hours being a businesswoman and figuring out where it is that I want to take this practice.
Okay, interesting. So if we rewind a little bit, you mentioned there was a lot of tremendous challenges happening, right, when you first started out. One of them was you took on many false identities before you figured out which, I guess, identity you want or you who you are.
Right.
Talk to me about that. What do you mean by taking on a lot of false identities? And do you see that today still?
When I graduated dental school, I had become a doctor. And that's part of the reason why I soiled that initial job. I was arrogant. I thought, I'm a doctor. You need to treat me like I am special. And anybody that isn't a doctor isn't worthy of being treated like they're special. And that actually comes from a sociologist from the 1950s, Dr. Talcott Parsons, who said that doctors are owed a certain status and reward for the hard work that they have had to put in to become a provider. And Parsons also argued that the doctor was a gatekeeper to health for the patient. The doctor held the key to the patient being healthy. And in that, they were superior. The patient was to be passive and the doctor was to be active. They were to be revered. And I led my life like that for too many years. But along the way, I'd found mentors who also pushed me towards that kind of thinking. And so when I came into the operatory, I was advised that I needed to be stoic and serious, and I needed to speak only in medical terms to make the patients think that I know more than them. Compassion was frowned upon, and I was arrogant. And patients really, really, really didn't like me. And because patients didn't like me, and because I wasn't who I was born to be, there's such a huge disconnect. I hated every single moment of being in the practice. It was a punishment to be the person that I was. And yet I didn't know. I thought this is what I signed up for. I didn't know that it could be any different. So that was the person that I was. That was the person that I thought I was supposed to be for, I don't know, 13 years of my career. And I have deep regret and shame about the way that I had been. Fortunately, I am moving further and further away from being that person. but it doesn't erase the negative interactions that I had formed between both my team members at that time and my patients.
Okay, interesting. So then can I ask how long were you at this, I guess, practice where you felt like you were like this, where you felt like you sold the opportunity?
I was there for probably about 9 months, after graduation until 9 months after. And then I joined another practice, the DSO practice, and I was there for about 9 months also, and until we bought this practice.
So the first 9 months when you were at that practice, it's not even a year. You know what I mean? But you created already so much of, I guess, that type of personality for yourself in that moment. And did you carry that on in the DSO too?
You know, the DSO was complex and complicated. I wasn't very busy. I didn't make a whole lot of money. Probably not as much. Although I remember my partner now, he said when he first saw me, I did not appear very friendly. Fairly arrogant, not likable, you know. He's one of my best friends now. That's just how I presented to the world. And that's what I thought I needed to present to the world as in order to be taken seriously. It was almost like I was overcompensating.
Yeah. Do you feel like you weren't being taken seriously before?
You know, the world has changed a lot now, but coming out of dental school as a woman certainly also had its challenges. When I went to continuing education courses, I would be ushered in towards the hygienists as opposed to the dentists. Very often, to this day, when I'm published, the doctor does not make it onto the page. So I was overcompensating because I wanted to be taken seriously, because in my mind, I wasn't being taken seriously because I wasn't a male provider.
Gotcha. So can I ask you, from back then to now, I guess, how important is it for you to be taken seriously, and by whom is it important in your life?
That's a really great question. The only people that I really need to be taken seriously by are probably my husband and my daughter. Everything else doesn't matter. I come and I present to the world as the person that I am. And there's patients that really love the way that I treatment plan or my philosophy. There's patients that don't. This week alone, I had two patients who came in who, one of them had six severely cracked teeth that hadn't been to the dentist in 7 or 8 years. And she almost fell off the chair when I told her that she would need 8 crowns. And I don't know that she took me seriously, if that makes sense, or she did not appear at that moment to value my expertise. Now, much of that might have been because of her surprise and discomfort with what I was presenting, perhaps whatever shame and guilt that she carried as I was telling her this. But whether or not she finds acceptance for me and my treatment plan no longer is relevant to me, as long as I am the person that I need to be for that patient. So I don't present a treatment plan to be liked by a patient. I present a treatment plan because it would be unfair for me to hold something back. But I do find patients that don't connect with me as the person that I am today, and maybe would connect to the old me a little bit better, the authoritarian with an air of arrogance. I don't know, maybe I'd be taken seriously. But ultimately, as a clinician, I am far less concerned with whether or not I am liked, as long as I present as a compassionate and fair dentist.
Okay. Now, I guess, could you kind of give me an example of that? Because how can you tell if you're presenting? That's a really good point. Because how can you tell if you're presenting to be liked? Like, I really want the patient to like me. I don't want them to leave me, kind of thing. And instead of, you know, this is what you need, and I'm going to give it to you straight. So how do we know the difference?
It's interesting that you bring that up. I was talking to my associate the other day, and we were talking about her treatment planning. And that's one of the things that she said. She said, I just want to be liked. And when you come into the operatory and you tell someone that they need $10,000 worth of work that they did not anticipate, you are not likely to be liked. When I do that in the operatory, I don't just jump in with that information. I create a rapport with the patient. But after that, I tell them my own philosophy. So I start with saying, I have had 9 root canals. I have lost one tooth and I now have an implant. The reason why I had these root canals is because I had cracked teeth. And what I am trying to do is I'm trying to make sure that you keep your teeth for the rest of your life and you don't end up in the same scenario that I have. Now, it is entirely up to you what you choose to do. And then this line really, really helps patients put things in perspective when I say, I don't want to hide anything from you. And I look at them and they usually, you know, nod their head up and down. I don't want to hide anything from you. It would be unfair of me to not tell you these things. That perhaps, you know, makes me slightly more likable. I don't just go from zero to 10,000 in 33 seconds. But that's how I preface all of my conversations. And that's why I am not as interested in being liked. Not to say that I'm disliked, because I form very, very deep connections with my patients. But what I'm trying to say is that it's not with every patient.
That's interesting. So that's how you start off building rapport with the patient, is you decide to let them know about your own experience.
Correct.
The root canal. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of continue. Sometimes, Maggie, I guess when we build rapport with someone, we tend to ask more questions, right? Of the patient, like, hey, well, why'd you come in? Or what's the pain, right? Kind of thing. Yep. And then, but I guess that kind of still lead to, well, when am I going to bring up the 10,000?
Yeah.
I mean, kind of thing.
And there's, you know, there's a lot of different schools of thoughts in whether or not the doctor should even talk about numbers. Mm-hmm. There's some practitioners that say you should absolutely not say anything about any money to the patient. And then you're likable, right? Because they have no idea what you're really asking for. But then the burden falls on your treatment coordinator and the sticker shock. And so you're trying to avoid that. Now, not to say that I want to clarify, I don't start with telling the patient, these are all the things that are wrong with you. I do spend a fair amount of time trying to get to know the patient and asking why they're here and focusing on their chief complaint, et cetera, et cetera. That is probably my favorite part of the job, is growing in communion with my patient in our relationship together and finding out who they are on a deeper level. Not just, okay, I'm here, I left my other dentist because they didn't take my insurance, and let's open your mouth and take a look at what's going on. It's really neat to find commonalities with your patients. And I'll tell you, there's studies that show that if advice comes from someone that you have something in common with, you are far more likely to act on that advice than if you don't have anything in common with that person.
So that's why you try to reach that common ground with them, right?
That, and it just makes for a better life, right? Like if you end up really wanting to be serious about taking care of humans, you want to get to know them. So again, I don't do that simply because of monetization. That's kind of the side benefit of it. I do it because I love doing it, and it's what they deserve.
Mm-hmm. Maggie, how do you handle then the patients who feel like you still have an MO? You know what I mean? Where they're mm-hmm. like, no, you still got something going on. And in your mind, all you do is care about this person and you want them to feel that, but they don't. I mean, I don't think you're going to hit a grand slam every single time either. But at the same time, there are those bad days where, is anybody listening to me, mm-hmm. kind of thing, right? So how do you handle that?
I think a lot of it comes with practice. Remaining in the practice for almost 2 decades has taught me just that. And if I have my own purpose in terms of what it is that I'm doing, and I believe in my own philosophy of what I'm doing, whether or not a patient follows through with a treatment plan is no longer personal to me. It is not a reflection of my presentation skills. It is not a reflection of my skill. They don't all have to agree. And I think understanding that they have the right, giving the autonomy back to the patient, creates way more ease and allows me to accept myself on an entirely different level as compared to me judging myself constantly based on the treatment acceptance rate, if that makes sense.
Yeah, judging yourself constantly based on treatment acceptance rate. Did you do that a lot?
Yeah, we do that all the time as dentists. All we do is we judge ourselves all day long. We judge ourselves based on our endofills. We judge ourselves based on our margins on the radiographs. We judge ourselves based on everything that we do, based on a contact point, based on occlusion, based on post-op complications, constantly. Unfortunately, our self-worth is so tied to what we do for a living. It's really hard to break away from that.
So would you say we should more monitor ourselves instead of judge ourselves when it comes to these things? Because I feel like when you're monitoring, you're able to okay, I can improve here. I can improve. You know what I mean? You're keeping an eye on it. But when you're judging, it's more black and white. It's like, oh, this sucked.
Yeah. And I think the black and white has a lot to do with it. What you're saying, the monitoring is kind of in the gray area. And I think, so recently, part of my journey in dentistry is that I'm starting to place implants. And I've been on this road of learning to place implants for probably the last, I don't know, 18, 20 months or so. And this is the hardest thing I've ever had to learn as a clinician. Every time I come in to uncover an implant, I am overcome with anxiety of whether or not that implant has integrated complications arising. And, you know, I'm a skilled practitioner with 20 years of experience. Nothing in chairside makes me anxious anymore. Nothing. I've just been doing it for so long that clinically speaking, there's very few things that, you know, knock me off my kilter. Implants do. Part of my journey in becoming an implantologist as early as it is finding acceptance in the fact that there's complications and there's going to be complications. And I'm not going to, you know, drop that screw in there and expect every single one to take. The fallacy of all of this is that the practitioners that have been doing this for a long time, the specialists, and even the general dentists that have been doing this for 20 years are not forthcoming about their own failures. We as dentists, as providers, are not very forthcoming about our failures. We want to present to the world as perfect human beings with these beautiful endophils, right? And again, that's where the judgment comes in. The complications is where the judgment comes in. But the truth of the matter is that if we would only be willing to share with one another how hard this is, I think we would find a lot more self-acceptance. One of the things that really helped me is that I just recently found out that the third leading cause of death in the United States after cancer and anything related to heart disease is human medical error. I mean, that just boggles your mind. And so if people die in hospitals because of medical error, isn't it okay for me to have a complication related to an implant? So a lot of these things help me put things in perspective. But very recently, I've been lucky enough to find practitioners that have been forthcoming about their journey in implantology. And they admit that this is just such a difficult road. Whereas before, I just surrounded myself with people that made it seem like they were born, right? And then they put their hands on a handpiece, on an implant, and everything went perfectly. So I think being honest with ourselves about really what it is like to be us, that kind of transparency is the gray area that won't force ourselves to judge ourselves so harshly.
Okay. Do you feel that there's more sharing now, more people forthcoming now? Or do you feel like it's even worse now because of social media, like we're posting nothing but highlights?
Yeah. I think it's a mixed bag. I think when it comes to our personal lives, I think it's gotten harder because all we see is the highlight reel. But I think in dentistry, as a result of social media, I think that we have been able to create deeper connections. When I graduated from dental school 20 years ago, dentistry was very, very isolating. And I have not found it to be as isolating anymore. Now, I don't know if that's just me, but people have been willing to be more vulnerable and more honest, and not necessarily on the large Facebook groups, but more when you meet them in person, when you go to different seminars. You meet people with whom you connect, and then that line of communication becomes more open. And, you know, we're finally willing to share some of our difficulties because through those difficulties, we grow together and we feel less alone.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Are you tired of facing endless back orders and staring at empty shelves? Well, it's time to turn the tide with The Dentist Supply Company. They're revolutionizing the dental supply scene by ensuring you're never caught without the essentials. With TDSC's vast selection of in-stock dental supplies, you can wave goodbye to product availability woes and welcome a smoother, more reliable way to stock up on everything your practice needs. But it even gets better. Dive into the savings with the hot promo code TDM25, which unlocks an epic 25% off orders over $500. You heard that right. Say hello to a world where you get what you need when you need it, all while keeping your budget in check. Go to TDSC.com now to check out everything they have to offer. Don't let back orders and empty shelves slow you down any longer. Embrace the TDSC way and keep your practice running like a well-oiled machine. It's time for action. It's time to make those savings work for you. Check out TDSC.com and use the coupon code TDM25 for 25% off and transform the way you manage your dental supplies. Say goodbye to the old hassles and hello to a seamless supply experience.
And then something you mentioned is to believe in your own philosophy. But what happens when sometimes we believe in our own philosophy, but our business doesn't? And so maybe there's like a timeline. I'm going to give you an example. Let's just say we start up and we want to be fee for service. And then months pass and you're like, I'm dying. It's dying here. Like, and then you hire a consultant. Consultant says, what'd you do? You got to get PPO, right? And get all these insurances. And then you start, and then you kind of like throw your philosophy out. You know what I mean? Or your what you wanted to do out the window. And now you're, so then what happens there? What are your thoughts, your recommendations on what we should do before we even get there?
I think figuring out who you are and where you want to be is really important. Figuring out your purpose. Like, let's say your purpose, your gut, everything within you says, I only want to serve fee-for-service clients or patients, as long as you're doing it for the right reason, right? However, so much in life is just not that black and white. And so much about life involves compromise. But beyond that, I don't know that I have a lot of advice on that. I do urge people to pursue their passion and find what it is that gets them out of bed and do more of that. It's not always possible. Somebody once asked me recently, what would be the advice that you would give young doctors who feel like they have to say yes to every treatment, even if they don't like doing certain treatment, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say you don't like doing endo, but you feel like you have to do endo to stay productive. And I think the expected answer is, well, you just keep doing what you love to do. That wasn't my answer. I did everything because I needed to in order to create an income. Now, having said that, because I did everything, I ended up discovering things that I really loved to do. In dental school, I fainted on my first day in oral surgery rotation. And I could have gotten out of dental school saying, I never want to extract a tooth. This was just horrendous. I never want to see blood. I can't wait to hold a scalpel. So again, everything in life is about finding compromises.
Yeah, gotcha. So you were more consistent with it than deciding, that's not my passion. I don't want to do that. You were just more, I guess, you stuck with the process until you're like, oh, there's stuff blooming here that, you know, I didn't even know could bloom.
And I'm not saying that it was easy at all, but part of it was also that I didn't know that I had a choice. Now you kind of know that you have a choice. And I don't know that I do things the same way because, for example, now there's things that I don't like to do in practice. I really don't like fillings and certain things like that. And so I tend to not do that. I'll have my partner or my associate do those things. And I just focus on surgery and endo is really all I do all day long. So I suppose I got myself to a place where I am less willing to compromise on what it is that I love to do. But if faced with the reality of not being able to create an income off of what it is that I love doing, I'd either have to learn more about how to monetize that because there are fee-for-service practices that are very, very successful or modify what I'm doing.
Mm, okay. And then how did you know you couldn't work for anyone else but yourself?
I mean, I'll go back to thinking that I was just too arrogant. I was just a maverick. I thought, and I'm not saying it in a positive way at all. I just thought I was right all the time. And clearly, I mean, it's 20 years in and I'm not right all the time. That's very important to know when you become a leader. But I think that was it. I wanted to do things my way and I wasn't willing to compromise.
And so then that's what catapulted you to saying, I need to have my own practice, call my own shots kind of thing.
That, and I had no idea how hard it was going to be because I'd never known anybody that's done this before. So I thought, okay, well, big deal. I'll just take out a loan for $250,000 and open the doors and start practicing dentistry. Mm-hmm. No idea that there was more to it. So this is probably ignorance.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. So how hard has it been?
The beginnings were very, very hard. The middle was really, really hard. You become stronger, but I don't know that it gets easier. Practice ownership is challenging. Practice ownership when you know nothing about business is fairly unforgiving. I was running a failed practice for 13 years and I didn't know it. I didn't know any different. And I thought that everybody was like that. And part of it was because nobody ever talked about their failures. And it wasn't until about 6 years ago that everything turned around for me. I'd learned about business and I learned about, you know, I started working with a consultant and from a practice that was producing $235,000 a year, we're edging towards 2.8, 2.9 million now.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So you said you were running a failed practice for 13 years?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in those 13 years span, any moment were you thinking, this is the last year? Or how did you know it? When you got to the point of 13, you're like, we've been just barely functioning.
I hated my life. I didn't like my job. I was burnt out, but it's not the kind of burnout that people talk about. It was like, oh, you're burnt out and then you get better. I was stuck in that for a decade. In 2018, I had cancer. And when I woke up on the other side after the trauma that cancer caused me and my family, I realized that the life that I had been leading was simply not the life that I had just been fighting for. And I made a conscious decision to investigate what it is that I wanted from life, how I wanted to lead my life, who I wanted to be. And that's when the metamorphosis really began. And it's been, you know, 6 years, not quite, but these last 6 years have been also excruciating in terms of the growth and the changes. And I have been so lucky to be supported by these incredible humans, my team members here at Happy Tooth and my husband and my partner, that have just made this so much easier than it could have been had I had to do it alone.
Mm. So changing your, I guess, if we were to separate it, like your personal life is what caused the growth for the business. So then if I could ask, like, what specifically had to change?
Figuring out why I want to wake up in the morning, I think had to change. So I think the biggest change that happened in the last 6 years is this idea of me being an arrogant doctor and thinking that I'm on top of the world and I'm going to tell you what's wrong with you and you're going to do what I'm going to tell you, to having been awakened to understanding what my strengths are and leading with those. You know, like I told you, Parsons, the sociologist, felt compassion was frowned upon. And we still see that everywhere in pop culture. Doctors are supposed to be separate from their patients' emotions. And my strength is compassion. I found that out through a lot of life coaching and a lot of reading and a lot of writing and a lot of processing and a lot of walking and a lot of thinking. And I began to incorporate compassion despite the fact that I was advised not to. And I also became honest with people about who I was, very publicly. And that's what turned everything around. I'm not saying I don't have hard days. I'm not saying that there aren't days that is difficult for me to get out. I'm not saying that I don't continue to go through cycles of burnout. I do, but it's different on this side now.
Different how? Like, if you can give me descriptors.
It's different because I own who I am and I like who I am. And I'm finally the person that I was born to be instead of pretending to be the person that everybody expected me to be. That's probably been the biggest change. And I started introducing that person into the operatory, in with my patients, leading with compassion. Patients saw that. So even though I don't have 100%, you know, success rate in closing treatment plans, patients trust me because, unlike many other providers, they feel heard in my chair. They feel present. They feel seen. And that is the most important gift that I can give to them.
Gotcha. So this whole time, Maggie, you've been, I guess, suppressing or pushing down that compassion that has been your strength, your biggest strength.
Yeah.
And so,
because compassion is the opposite of, like, when you become compassionate, you become soft, right? Mm. Like, you become human. And when you need to be a doctor and a provider, you need to be hard, if that makes sense. And so the two, it felt like you couldn't marry the two.
Yeah, that happens. And it also happens sometimes because we get burned by a team member, burned by all these people. And then we're like,
absolutely.
And it happens and it happens and it happens. And then you're thinking, oh, that's it. I got to be really strict and really hard. Yeah. And then we hear other people tell us we got to be like that. And then, so where's the line? How do you balance it?
Yeah, I was thinking about our talk today, and this is really, I think, the most important thing. There should not be a division between who you are professionally and who you are personally. Yes, we can say the decision is just business, right? And there are some decisions that are just business, but who you are as a business person is very much colored by who you are as a human being. My friend Eric Rowan, who's a coach and a dentist, used to have this saying, and he would say when you came into his practice and you were a team member, there'd be a bucket outside the door, not a real bucket, and you were supposed to leave all of your garbage at the back before you came into the office where you were going to perform and do the best that you can. But whatever was happening outside of the office was not allowed in the office. And what he came to realize was that that's not possible for a human being. If you have something that's going on in your life, whether, you know, it's a spouse that's sick, or maybe your parent is dying, or your child is sick, you simply cannot separate that. You can do the best that you can, but you may have to, in those moments, depend on your other team members to carry you for that day or for that week. And then it's your turn to carry them. I think my point in here is that there ought not to be a separation between who you are and how you run your business. I think there needs to be a marriage of those two things. And I think integrity would need to play a really important role in how you combine the two.
Okay. I like that. I like that a lot. So then I guess what happens when you feel like there's a team member where you're just like, I'm carrying you too much. Yeah. Like you're having too many, and you can't, I mean, I don't know, Maggie, maybe you can, but I feel like I can't just let you go. You know what I mean? And especially in this moment that you're in and the times that you're in, like something's going on in your health, then your family, then something else. You know what I mean? What do we do in that situation?
I'm glad you brought that up. This is actually happening right now in my office. I have a dental assistant right now who I care about very, very much. She is a kind and respectful and skilled provider. And, you know, she has been going through a really, really difficult time in her life. And as a result of that, and we're talking about 6 months back, as a result of that, 6 months, 7 months ago, her performance started to significantly veer off. And, you know, multiple talks and multiple promises, and again, caring for this other human being and knowing that she was suffering, what ends up happening, and again, you have to have the integrity of not just to this person that is suffering, but to everybody else in the practice. What ended up happening is that it was a domino effect with everybody else needing to carry an extra load for way too long. And there, the domino effect of not being efficient and effective in running the practice because one person just was not performing. And I've had this happen before, and I've hung on to team members for way too long for that reason, because I loved them and because I wanted to be there for them, because I wanted to carry them. And so we finally had a conversation on this Monday, and I ended up hiring someone else. I offered to help her find a job. I asked her if she'd be willing to stay on to train her replacement, and she was, which is incredible. And I trust her to do that. And so she's here and the replacement is here and everybody's doing really well. And I'm helping her find another job. And she's going to absolutely blossom in this other place. But when I was telling her that we were going to let her go, I cried because it was that hard. And that's the other thing, is I am still human. It's okay for you to see me be emotional when something like this is important to me. And it doesn't mean that I'm not going to make this difficult decision. We can both be human in agreeing that this is a difficult moment for both of us.
Gotcha. So you still made the decision, but I guess her seeing the empathy, right? The compassion, but at the same time, understanding, I guess in that moment, when you do say, hey, this is a difficult decision, but she sees your emotions, or they see your emotions, like you can really understand and think, okay, it is business.
And sometimes it matters and sometimes it doesn't. I mean, I've done that with another employee a little while back where, again, I was fairly emotional. I didn't want to let her go, but we could not function with her poor performance. And, you know, she got very belligerent and it didn't go in this same direction. So you can't always predict those things, but you can only do the best that you can. But the truth is that you're not just there for a single person being compassionate to one team member. You're compassionate to everybody else on your team too. And if one person can't carry their load for a prolonged amount of time and you really see no change, it's time to move on, no matter how hard that is.
Yeah. Do you give counsel or warning and kind of like, hey, this is like not strike one, but, you know, kind of in a sense, like this is strike one, this is strike two.
Yeah, we had many conversations. In fact, when I started to interview candidates, I also let her know that ahead of time. And she was here for the interviews. And so I didn't blindside her. And there were multiple conversations prior to that, you know, including there was a demotion that was probably happened about 4 months ago. So it didn't come out of left field. And when I told her that we were letting her go, she said, gosh, she was just so kind. She's like, I understand. I understand where you're coming from. It's okay.
And then the one who was, you said, belligerent. Did the same process happen? And she still was like,
yes.
Better?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it depends on the person's personality. Sometimes it depends on the shock value. Sometimes it depends on who they are as a person. Different people react to difficult situations.
That's true. Yeah. So then throughout this process, Maggie, one of the questions I wanted to ask you is, I guess from the moment that you decided to own your practice, your own practice, in the state that you were in to now, what's been some of the biggest struggles, fails, or pitfalls that you've encountered?
Wanting to be everybody's friend, failing to take the advice of others, thinking that I can reinvent the wheel. This is probably the biggest one, if I had to put one. It's wanting to save money by doing things myself. So for example, we now have a consultant and a coach, and we've been with them, Productive Dentist Academy, for the last 3.5 years. I have attempted to run this practice on my own without any help, without any background, without any mentorship. No one in my family had ever owned a business. No one in my family had ever been a dentist. No one in my family before me had even lived in this country. And so I just wanted to reinvent the wheel myself. I thought I was smart enough to figure out all of these things, you know, and then whatever happened, happened. And then I started paying for help. I started paying for life coaching. I started paying for practice coaching. I started paying for marketing. And yes, it costs money, but I would not have come to a point where I produce $1,500 an hour without those things.
Gotcha. So then what to you was the final tipping point to where you're like, that's it. I'm going to hire a consultant and it's going to be the Productive Dentist Academy. Mm-hmm. Like, what was that?
It was a pandemic. I took a course with them that allowed me to write down the most, just this beautiful vision of what I wanted my practice to be, a business plan, a roadmap for the next 24 months. The course was about 8 weeks long. I actually took it twice because I really wanted to hone in on what it is that I wanted to do. But when I came back on Monday to try and incorporate those things, I had realized that I lacked consistency and accountability. I'd had great ideas before. Why didn't they materialize? Because I had nobody to hold me accountable and consistent in those things. I mean, life gets in the way and you just can't continue to juggle all those balls. That was probably the awakening that I needed in saying, okay, it's going to cost a lot of money and we're taking a huge risk by spending this money because you're fearful, right? Otherwise, you're thinking, I could just take home this extra $60,000 a year. But really, that is a decision I will never ever regret.
So it's more so not the know-how, but it's more like, hey, I'm investing this much. I better mm-hmm. do something or yeah. else we just wasted $60,000 kind of thing.
Yes. And there is a know-how to it, right? We don't know how to run a business. I was taught how to look at numbers and how to look at the schedule. I was taught all of that because it would have taken me another 40 years to figure this out. And so there's a significant shortcut when you start to work with people that know more than you do.
To you, how can you vet that? Especially now. I feel like there's a lot of
there's a lot. Yeah. I think the most important part for me, I had gotten to know Productive Dentist Academy through that course that I took twice. And I'd gotten to know every one of their coaches and you know, the support team and Bruce and Victoria. And that certainly helped. But even when you're talking about hiring a marketing company or a life coach, it's got to feel easy. Like there were other consultants that I interviewed through the years and everybody came through and said, you're going to fail unless you, this is a treatment plan and you're going to do this or you're going to fail. They never took under consideration what it is that we wanted. And it was the same thing with a life coach. When you start to talk to someone and you're thinking about hiring them to figure out who you want to be in life, you've got to be able to connect to them on some level, be human with them on some level. And that was really, that was the reason why I hired the life coach that I did. And that was the reason why I hired Productive Dentist Academy, is because I felt that they understood who I was and they were going to help me become that ideal version of myself, whether it was personally through life coaching or professionally through practice coaching.
And how do you feel understood?
I did not consider this question. I don't know that I know how to answer that. I suppose it comes in similar to how we look at our patients. When a patient comes in and they ask to have their front tooth that is chipped fixed, and instead you go on about them needing 8 crowns, they don't feel heard. It comes in what goes on after that conversation. Mm-hmm. How much of what you told them did they remember? How much of what you told them did they take under consideration when they created a plan for you to change? There's a study that came out and it had to do with how frequently healthcare providers interrupt their patients when they're telling them their chief complaint. And it takes between 8 and 9 seconds for a healthcare provider to interrupt the patient with their chief complaint, because we imagine they're going to go on for 10 minutes. The truth is that if the patient was able to explain their chief complaint, they only went on for 23 seconds, right? Mm-hmm. So that kind of plays into the being heard part, listening generously, actually having not someone speak while you're speaking. All of those kind of go into the equation.
Interesting. So it's more than just hearing, it's listening. And there's more than just listening. It's validating, right? Like you're saying, I get you. I understand. Yes. Maybe even say it back to them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And that's to you and to many people, but to you also, that's how you feel. Okay. I'm being understood now.
Yes.
Understanding, right?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. So, and then you said you have life coach. Do you still have a life coach or no?
Yeah. So I do different things throughout my life to make myself healthier. I was with my life coach for about 4 years and I've recently stopped life coaching, but started to focus on healing some of the trauma within my past. And also my husband and I started couples therapy. So I am still working on myself, but just in a little bit of it from a different angle.
But always continuing that work kind of thing. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. No, Maggie, this has been wonderful. If anyone has any further questions or concerns or wants to reach out to you, where can they find you?
You can find me very easily on Facebook or Instagram, Dr. Maggie Augustin, or you can go to my website, www.maggieaugustin.com, and our practice website is myhappytooth.com.
Okay, so that's going to be in the show notes below if anyone wants to reach out to Maggie. And Maggie, thank you so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure, and we'll hear from you soon.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. And Maggie, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast. I truly appreciate it. If you want to reach out to Maggie, please do so. Go in the show notes below. Look for her name. It's in the show notes below. And then you can definitely reach out to her. Just look for the contact information there. And then you can definitely pick her brain. Ask her more questions or concerns. I know she is being booked to speak in many places. I'm looking at her website right now. And she has presentations, one called Lie to Me, The Destructive Nature of Self-Comparison, which we touched on today. She has another one called Beyond the Drill, From Struggle to Success, The Indispensable Benefits of Compassion to the Provider. So definitely, if you can relate, reach out to Maggie when you can, as soon as you finish listening to this episode. And let me ask you, are you tired of the ordering runaround, wasting your precious time? I'm talking about the endless back and forth, hunting for the best deals and juggling multiple suppliers. That can be a real drag. And we get it. Time is money. And in today's fast world, being efficient is more than just a plus. It's essential. But that's where the Dentist Supply Company comes in. They're here to cut through the hassle and make efficiency your new normal. Their innovative platform means you can kiss those traditional ordering headaches goodbye. Their website is super easy to use, offering a smooth, all-in-one solution that doesn't just save you time, it also makes sure you're getting awesome prices. And to kick things off, here's a deal just for you. Get 25% off orders over $500 with the promo code TDM25. That's TDM25. With the Dentist Supply Company, you're not just saving money, you're investing in a smarter, quicker, and more efficient way to manage your orders. Why settle? With the Dentist Supply Company, you get speed, simplicity, and savings all in one go. It's time to take control of your ordering process and give your practice the edge it needs. So head over to www.tdsc.com. That's tdsc.com. Use the promo code TDM25. That's TDM25. And see the difference for yourself. Or you can just go in the show notes below, click the first link in the show notes below, and it will take you to the TDSC website, the Dental Supply Company's website, and then go shopping. Don't let the hassle of ordering hold you back any longer. With the Dental Supply Company, top-notch efficiency is just a click away. Thank you so much for supporting the podcast and tuning in, and I'll talk to you in the next episode.